I have a blessing here, a blessing because when I was 2 years younger, I traveled up the East Coast and I met so many wonderful people. And the person that's going to share their thoughts with us tonight, I met on the East Coast. And then she just didn't drop me. She kept in touch with me. And my happy day when she said, oh, I'm going to move to California. And that is our speaker that's going to share her thoughts with us tonight, and that's our Jody. Jody.
Millie West says these really nice things to me, and I keep telling her that it's...
So
you always say these really nice things, and I keep telling you it's the other way around, that it's, you know, you're the blessing. So, yeah, I kind of am a stalker, I guess. I met her in North Carolina.
Can you hear me now?
No. Sorry. My audio engineer son getting it right. He's like, okay, better. I did meet Millie in North Carolina, and she would come there to do circles, and I met her probably 13 or 14 years ago, and I did move here just to be with Millie and this church, so I am like the ultimate stalker. Thank you for trusting me with this time. When I asked her what I should talk about, she said, you know how she gets this little twinkle? She goes, well, whatever. But I think it'd be nice if you talk about the messages that you get from your hubby. Not the ones that I give you, but the ones that he gives you directly. And I had this mental image of my angels laughing and throwing some high fives around. Because for about a year and a half, I've wanted to write a book. It's called Messages from Heaven. And it's about my experiences with Millie, the messages that I've gotten from her over the years, but especially in the 2 years since my husband passed away. I'm actually a New York Times and a USA Today best-selling author of romance. It's very different writing made-up stories and telling my story. And I keep letting fear and life get in the way. I already know the title, Messages from Heaven. I have an idea of the picture that I want to use. So the angels basically put me in the position where I'm telling it orally, like, well played, angels. I shared at the end of the year celebration that the first time I met Millie, I went straight to that. You know how Millie always says you want to get to the point that you know that you know that you know? And I went like 0 to 60. The first time I met Millie, there was no doubt. I knew that the messages she gave were real. I knew that my loved ones could communicate with us. So when my husband was, I brought him home from hospice and there was no recovering this time. I kept telling him, as soon as you leave, you have to find Millie and have her call me so I know you're okay. That was the only way I could get through. Charles was my world. He had been forced to retire in 2012. I worked from home, so we were inseparable. He went to book conferences with me. He went to signings, conferences, travel to see family. We were literally inseparable. We were never apart. And I wasn't sure how I was going to get along without him. And I kept telling my sister-in-law, I can't do this without him. I can't do it without him. And I had a choice. And she said, yes, you can. And you will. And that's when I started saying, as soon as you leave, you have to have Millie call me so I know you're okay. Because that was the bye for now. I knew that I would be okay, because I could still get those messages from him. Took her 27 hours to call me, and she kept saying, you wanted to know he was okay, and now you know he's okay. Now, that is not something I told her. That was him saying, you wanted to know I was okay, I'm fine. She described my bedroom. She knew where my son was at that exact moment. I mean, it was indisputable. This was Charles, and he was giving me those messages. And she kept saying, stay alert, honey. you guys are going to have so much fun. I think her definition was different than mine at the time, but she was in a different place than I was at that moment. And she said, he's going to go shopping with you. He's going to help you find specials. I think something purple. It was 50% off and 50% off of that again. I found it the next day. She kept saying, stay alert. Stay alert. He's right there with you. Just stay alert to what he's telling you and the messages that he's giving you. My parents stayed with me. They had already planned a trip to help with some projects around the house. They came in early and ended up being there with me for almost a month. And as we were working on projects around the house, I realized how little I knew about my house. Like, I knew where the circuit breaker was, but nothing was labeled. And I needed to shut the power off to the deck because my stepdad was getting ready to tear it apart. So I stood there at the breaker box and I said, okay, Charles, tell me which one it is because I don't want to have to reset all the clocks in the house after I flip all these breakers off. And I looked at him for a minute. I kind of got drawn to this one and I flipped it and I heard my dad outside yell, that's the one. Charles had a huge garage. Our garage was 1,000 square feet. It had built-in workbenches. It had, I don't know how many toolboxes. It had just stuff everywhere. And when I needed something, I would walk in and I would say, okay, Charles, where is this? And I would get kind of just drawn to whatever direction. I kept finding it. He would tell me where it was. I could find the tools. My friend Hayes one day even said, I don't know where this is. And he said, did you ask Charles? He tells you where everything else is. Hayes even did that months, almost a year later. Hayes was looking for some thread tape. And he said, I know Charles has it. And I said, well, have you asked him? And he grinned and he went in the garage and he came out a few minutes later and he said, I found it. He said he told me right where it was. So it's comforting, you know, to have those, that connection. The really cool stuff started happening. I took my parents to the airport in Raleigh and I was driving to my dad's. I didn't want to go home by myself. So I dropped my parents off and I started driving to Florida. I knew I wasn't going to make it all the way, so I called the hotel where Charles and I normally stayed. They were sold out. So I started having some anxiety, like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then I remembered Millie saying, ask him to help you. So I said, okay, Charles, I need a place to stay tonight. Work it out. A couple hours later, I started having this craving for steak. I wanted a really good steak, baked potato, and a salad. Now, when I travel, I do not. I fast food, and the faster the better. It's like, and even when I stop for the night, I go through a drive-through. I take it to my hotel with me. I don't want to go back out. I don't want to get in the car. I'm done. So I don't know why I've got this weird thing for a steak, but that's not happening. So I went, as I got closer to Savannah where we normally stopped, I had the feeling that I needed to go past our normal exit. And again, I'm kind of getting anxious because I knew that there really wasn't a lot past that exit. I was going to have to drive all the way to Jacksonville, which was another couple hours. But I thought, okay, just trust what you're getting. So I took the next exit, and I had the feeling to turn left. And I'm looking, and all I could see are trees, like woods. And I kept saying, are you sure? I was seeing at the stop sign. Are you sure there doesn't really look like anything over there? But the urge was really strong. So I turned to the left. The trees broke apart, and there was a Holiday Inn Express with a steakhouse attached. I've never seen a restaurant attached to a Holiday Inn, let alone a steakhouse. I didn't even doubt that they had a room. I just got my bags. I went in, got my room, and I went and ate my steak that night. Got to my dad's the next day, and Charles had a little setup on the side where he had he put his iPad and his cell phone and just his glasses. It was his place, and it was very bare. And I kept going to bed, and then I'd leave the room, and I'd walk back in, and I'd leave the room. And finally, I just went in, and I shut the door, and it was dark in the room. And I said, Charles, I just need you to tell me, just give me a sign that you're here. My cell phone was across the room, and it lit up. I was like Kevin in Home Alone. I checked it. There were no messages. There was no text. There was no reason for it to light up, but it lit up. And I thought, okay, I can't argue with that. You know, it's another sign that he's here. When I got ready to go back home that Sunday, it was Mother's Day. And I had a lot of regret that I wasn't at home with his mom, because I knew it was a hard day for her. But it was also Charles's birthday, and we had a lot of firsts. He passed in April. His dad's birthday was a week later. His birthday was less than a month later. It was Mother's Day. His sister's birthday, our anniversary, was a month later. It all hit at once. And I felt like I just needed that time in the car by myself, just kind of me and him. And on the Jeep, he had a Jeep, and on the radio dial, you could see five radio stations lined up, and it could be set to either show the artist or the song. And it was showing the artist. And there was an REM song that was showing. I don't like REM, but he did. And I kept thinking, listen to the song. And I finally said, okay, it's your birthday. If you want to hear REM, you get to hear REM. And I hit the button, and it said, this one goes out to the one I've left behind. This one goes out to the one I loved. I am, I am, I am. It was the end of the song, and it just kept repeating at that point. And I was so overwhelmed, I almost had to take an exit. It happened more on the way home. He kept playing more songs, James Taylor songs. There was a song, You Have a Friend in Me. He used to sing that to me when we first started dating. There was just so much. He figured out right away he could talk to me through songs. I took a little longer. And I kept hearing, there's a Charlie Puth song. I think it's One Call Away. And it kept going through my head. For like 2 weeks, this song was going through my head, and I couldn't. It was really starting to annoy me. And one day I was mowing the grass, and it finally hit me. The words were, I'm only one call away. I'll be there to save the day. Superman's got nothing on me. I'm only one call away. As soon as I realized, oh, that's Charles. It's not just this random song in my head. Then it went away. The next song that he started giving me whenever I was, this was, you know, we were a couple months into it. Now he's gone. I'm starting to really try to adjust to life without him, and I'm struggling a lot. And I kept hearing this song by One Republic. I think it's One Republic. I did it all. No, I lived. I did it all. I owned every second that this world could give. I saw so many places, the things that I did. Yeah, with every broken bone, I swear I lived. Now, the day before he passed, his sister said he can't have any regrets because he did it all. And I don't know how many broken bones he had, but I know he had stitches 20 different times by the time he was 20. So, and I know of 3 different broken bones. So, again, that was him. I really wanted him to come to me in a dream. My brother passed when I was 19, and that was my first experience with messages from the other side. He came to me in a dream, and even though I knew he was gone and I knew I was dreaming, I still knew that this was my brother talking to me. My uncle had also come to me after he passed, so I really wanted Charles to come to me in a dream, and he did. I was in Florida again at my dad's. He was just there, and I gave him this big hug, and I laid my head on his chest, and he said, "Can you give your mom a message for me?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, tell her how much I appreciate everything she's done for you and how much she continues to do. Now, I knew that message was going to mean a lot to my mom, but I was mad because I wanted some messages. I wanted that time with him, but I passed that on to him. And then in April of last year, he came to me again in a dream, and it was significant. He called me. It was in the dream. He called me on the phone. It wasn't like I saw him. He called me. And the first thing that struck me was his voice was really strong and clear. The medicines that he had to take, my husband had a brain tumor. He was sick almost 9 years. He fought a really long time. And I know he fought because he didn't want to leave me. And Millie's confirmed that. He's actually said he wished he had left before he did. And if he had known he would get to spend so much time with me, he would have left before. But he came to me in this dream, and I realized how strong his voice was. It was his normal voice. And then it hit me that he was talking on a cell phone, so that meant he was driving. He had seizures because of his brain tumor, so he wasn't able to drive the last 18 months of his life, and that was really a struggle for him. And We were just talking, and it was kind of random. I don't really remember what we were talking about. It wasn't really that important. I was just cataloging all these things. He's driving. He sounds really good. He sounds really happy. But I'm selfish, and I wanted him to come back. And I kept asking him, honey, please come back. I miss you. Your family misses you. The boys miss you. And he said, I can't. I can't come back. And even if I could, it wouldn't work between us. As Dusty said, a world in which Charles and I didn't work is inconceivable. We weren't the perfect couple, but we were pretty darn close. I could probably count on one hand the number of times we argued. We just worked. So for him to tell me I couldn't come back, and if I did, we wouldn't work, that was devastating. And then he said, you would resent me. If I could even magically come back, you would resent me. And then he gave me this image, because he knew he had to draw a picture for me, because I'm not real good at visualizing things. Charles actually built me a house one time. He built me a model house because I couldn't visualize the floor plan. So he got foam core, and he made a model house for me so that I could see it. Dusty, that's for you. And so he started giving me a picture. And he said, for a really long time, our lives paralleled like this. But I've had to go this way, and you have gone this way. And I have work that I'm having to do here on this side. And you have work that you have to do on that side. And eventually our paths are going to come back together, and we'll be together again. But it's going to be a while. And you just have to do your work, and I'll do mine. And then we'll be together again. When I woke up, I was really, it took me a couple days, because it's not like he could ever come back, but to process this, and I knew he was right, and I had already started making plans to come and move here with Millie at the time. But I knew it wasn't a dream, and I knew it was Charles. And I knew he was telling me that I had to come here and that I had things to do and that we would be together again. And the messages that I get through Millie, through class on Tuesday night, just confirm that he is still with me. And I want to write the book because I have Millie, I have Kimberly, I have a whole church. And, you know, I have a whole church of people that help me with these messages. But a lot of people don't. And I want people to know that their loved ones, even though they're not here in physical, they're still with them. And I really let life sidetrack me, especially the past 6 months. If not for my friends in this church, I'm really not sure how I would have gotten through, because it's been a really dark time for me. Kelsey's and Trish, Kimberly, Vince, Stan, just, I have a handful. I have a really, Millie, of course, but I have a really close-knit group that keeps me. And even Warren, I ran into Warren at the Subaru. If you ever doubt this church, I ran into Warren at the Subaru dealership on Thursday, and I said, I'm speaking on Wednesday, and he came in a little bit ago. This really is a family, y'all. But I've gotten sidetracked. And this putting this talk together reminded me of my purpose and the need to write this book. And again, I just say, well played, angels. And thank you, Millie, for letting me have this time and for trusting me with the time. And thank you, Claudia, for recording it between my notes and the recorded. Dusty recorded it. Now I have the notes that I need to write the book. And it will be done by the end of September, so I can take it to a book conference I'm going to in October. So, thank you.